Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, April 30th, 2018. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm very good. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Andrew Orr, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, and it's good to be here.
It's great to have both of you here. And I'm thinking, because we may get into some interesting tech stuff, we should just jump right in and start talking about 5G. And so it doesn't matter. Here's the point. We got the news over the weekend that T-Mobile and Sprint have reached an agreement for a merger. T-Mobile will be buying Sprint. So they're going to be paying $26.5 billion for Sprint. And they'll have the combined company will be under the T-Mobile name. They'll have, I believe it's over 120 million customers once the merger's done, and that will still put them in third place, or leave them in third place behind AT&T. But it's the gap between second and third will be a lot narrower, because we're going from like 75 million to 120 million subscribers, and AT&T is like 141 million. Anyhow, so part of the plan with this merger is that T-Mobile is going to aggressively build out what they're saying will be the first true nationwide 5G network. And that it sounds pretty cool, because that could be really useful for a lot of people. That means substantially faster speeds than we're getting with LTE for cellular internet connections. And that that raises some questions then about what exactly is going to happen with 5G. Does this mean that Wi-Fi networks go away because we won't need them anymore? And so we need to take a look at these things. And John, you have some information that will probably be really helpful.
Yeah, this Sprint T-Mobile merger brings up the 5G topic, and it's coincidental that in Friday's Particle Debris, I talked about Apple canceling its airport products. And I tried to think of why Apple might be doing that other than just loss of interest. I mentioned that individuals lose interest, companies lose their vision. But I tried to think of some reason why maybe Apple is doing this that's technical. And I surmised that, as just as an example, and that is a sound solution, that the coming of 5G means that we're going to have gigabit speeds, and that could possibly mean in some locations, in the articles I've read, and especially in inner cities where there's great infrastructure, that you don't need in-office Wi-Fi anymore because you've got such a high-speed system coming into the office. But there's a problem with 5G. In order to get the high data rates and high bandwidth, you need high frequencies. And high frequencies mean short wavelengths. And short wavelengths means that you need line of sight and that it doesn't go through walls very well. So 5G is characterized as millimeter wavelengths. So we're looking at something in the 10, 20, 40, 50 gigahertz range, something in the 5 to 50 millimeter wavelength. And so the downside is that you need these what's called small cells, the repeater assistance in the big cities. And when you've got buildings and you've got offices and you've got poles, lamp poles, and camera poles where you can place these repeaters, everything's cool. And you walk down the street, you've got 5G as you go from your office to Starbucks. But in the suburban areas and rural areas, it's not likely we're going to see that kind of infrastructure popping up. And so for a long time, we're still going to need either cable or satellite ISP, and then home Wi-Fi systems that can easily move through our walls. And so there's a lot of technical considerations. And it's 5G is not just a panacea where we dump everything and we move to 5G. It's going to be a spot solution for areas that can utilize it, but it's not going to replace suburban and rural business and home Wi-Fi. 5G does have some specific advantages, though. We're talking about somewhere in the gigabit per second connection.
Mm-hmm.
The specification calls for anywhere from 1 to 10. The technical specifications suggest that there should be a perception of 99.999% availability. It's a much lower energy.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a marketing thing, but I think it's going to be available in bigger cities where there's money to be made. But it is going to be a challenge for a phone design as well, because it's going to require a new antenna design because of these higher frequencies. And so I wouldn't, according to the article I read at, where was it, The Verge, somewhere, they suggested that we wouldn't see the 2018 phones including 5G because the antenna design thing is such a tough problem.
I would be surprised to see to see the 5G capable phones showing up this year. It just doesn't seem likely.
There are some 5G attachments for notebook computers, and they've got ungodly large antennas that would never fit into a modern iPhone.
Yeah. So John, you mentioned the higher spectrum that's needed for 5G, and T-Mobile is hoping they can address the problem with lots of buildings by adding in their 600 megahertz spectrum. So they would have the high spectrum for getting the fast signal out, but then that lower spectrum for going through the walls. And I'm curious how that will play out, because T-Mobile is saying, look, you know, when we take what Sprint has, when we take what we have and put it together, we're going to be able to make a reliable and robust 5G network that's going to be available even if you're in an area where there's lots of walls.
I think the whole thing depends on rollover. You know, if you're in an area where 5G is supported, you're going to be in great shape and you'll see the indicator in your phone and you'll get great data rates. But then you got to marry it with, as you said, some lower frequency backup system so that you can roll back to so that you can get the reception you need. So that when it's bouncing off of buildings or traveling through walls and you get better penetration, you don't get the high data rate, but you still get a signal. So I think 5G is a marketing hype. And it's not going to be a total replacement. It's going to be a hybrid system of rollovers to the best signal and the best throughput.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. Andrew, I've been curious. What do you think about this whole merger and the promise of this amazing nationwide 5G network?
Well, I agree that I think a lot of it is hype. I think that they're really trying to build up hype and support just for the fact that it is a merger, like they want everyone to support it. It sounds like this is mostly going to, the new company will just be T-Mobile, like Sprint is just going to go away.
Yeah, and they
haven't said. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, they haven't said specifically that the Sprint brand goes away, but they have certainly implied that, because they said the new company will be called T-Mobile, and John Legere, is that how you pronounce his name? I've never known, because Brian always uses his French accent, and I have to use that term loosely when he says his name. So we'll go with John Legere. He's going to be the CEO of the new T-Mobile, And then Sprint's CEO will be on the board for this T-Mobile company.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that they'll announce later what they're doing with branding strategies. But that just really sounds to me a lot like, we'll tell you later that the Sprint logos are disappearing off of everything and we'll have to make new business cards.
This is about the time we see people on Twitter proposing merger names like Spobo.
Seriously, Spobo?
There's probably lots of other variations, but that's the first one I thought of.
That's just, I get why they haven't contacted you for their marketing team.
That's probably why too.
Yeah. All right. So
what I'm wondering is how long is it going to take to roll out? Because I've always heard 2019 to 2020, but if, as John was saying, because of the limitations, cities will need to build repeaters everywhere. That sounds like it might take a lot longer before it becomes truly widespread.
Yep, that's totally possible. So I live in Boulder, and Boulder has a serious cellular problem because the city won't let the cell companies build the towers that they need for the antennas. So we have problems where you drive a couple blocks and you lose your cell signal, and you drive a few more blocks and it comes back.
Uh-huh.
And it's ridiculous. So what the compromise has been is that AT&T and Verizon and presumably T-Mobile are now putting up their microcells on power poles and light poles. And so they're building out their LTE networks with the microcells. And with as easy it is to get those in place, my guess is that, well, it takes a lot of time, you know, man hours just to install that many devices. It'll probably go, in the grand scheme of things, relatively quickly. But, I mean, still, you have to have a lot of devices and you have to have a lot of people out there putting them on poles. But once they're there, okay, great.
So. Yeah, reason we hear about these technologies so far in advance is because there are many phases of development. The first article I saw on 5G was from the GSMA Intelligence Association, and it was just dated December 2014. You know, first there's the mathematics of the bandwidth and the operation, and then there's the strategy of how it's deployed and developed, and then there's the engineering phase, where there's a lot of testing going on, and this takes years. And then about that time, you start hearing about it. But then it takes another 3 or 4 years to actually teach the installers, develop the technology, build the hardware, roll it out in selected places, phase it in. That takes years. So, Andrew, you're right. The numbers I've seen about widespread 5G are the 2020 range.
And T-Mobile and Sprint are saying that they don't expect to complete their merger, because, of course, it still has to go through regulatory approval for a little while. They're saying that they expect to be done by mid-2019 at the latest.
Optimistic.
So realistically, we can't expect that they will start working on building out their 5G network before that. So we're looking at the earliest mid-2019 before they start working on the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking we're looking at 2020 before we have reasonable 5G coverage. And even then, it will still be spotty in a lot of areas. And I'm betting that there will be a lot of people that were wishing that 5G phones were available.
I just about guarantee we won't see them in the 2018 iPhones.
I would be really surprised. Yeah. It just seems way too early. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to our second topic, which, John, you alluded to a little bit already, and it's the whole Wi-Fi thing. And specifically, airports Apple's announcement that they have dropped the airport product line. And we've been getting some listener comments and feedback on that. And John, you got some interesting responses as well.
Let me quote from the article. That's a mistake because customers want to place their communications trust in Apple. And a reader quoted that back to me and said, absolutely, I would never buy anything except an Apple base station unless I had to, which I guess at some point I will. This is very sad. One of the emerging themes from this is that Apple has developed a reputation for privacy and security. And when you marry that with our communication needs, which are pretty strong, people have this trust in Apple that they can go into an Apple store and walk out with an airport base station. And the firmware and the hardware has been tested by Apple that they can place their trust in it, that it's not some chip that Apple bought from China sight unseen in mass quantities and just threw into their device without testing. So now we were faced with the idea of turning to other companies who may not have such a public and high-profile view of the security of their products. I mean, when you think about some of the notable companies that make these products, they make fine products, D-Link and Linksys and Synology, but their public profile and affirmations about the security of their products is not as strong as Apple's. And so you're really playing kind of potluck when you go into Best Buy and pay $35 for a router, and it's a chip that's been imported and not gone over with a fine-tooth comb by the company because they don't have the time or the expertise or don't want to spend the money. So that seems to be an emerging theme from my article on Friday about one reason why we're sad that Apple's given up these airport products.
And the comments that I've been getting from people are along the same lines. They're sad and disappointed that Apple's getting out of this space. And what they want, instead of Apple saying, look, just here, go buy these Wi-Fi mesh products from these other companies, go buy these standalone routers from these other companies. What they want is for Apple to continue to support and develop the airport product line and make best-in-class Wi-Fi routers so that they can just go into a store, buy the thing, take it home, plug it in, and it works. Right. And they feel comfortable and confident that their personal information isn't going to get hijacked and sold off to someone else.
Another theme that came up was that ISPs seem to be doing a pretty good job of providing integrated router home Wi-Fi base stations with big ugly antennas and black boxes. But, you know, they're free. My experience is, at least with Comcast, I don't know about the other ISPs, but Comcast allows you to attach your own equipment. So years ago, I gave up on Comcast's cable modem and went out and bought a really nice Motorola Bitsurfer cable modem and told them I was attaching my own product. And they said, yeah, that's fine.
It's 11 o'clock. You know, I got some listener comments on Twitter saying the same thing. And curious. Actually, here's one from Jerry. I didn't hear you mention ISP provided combo internet modems and Wi-Fi routers. I would guess the majority of the public have no need to buy separate modems in airports when they can effortlessly rent a unit that they can exchange when there's a problem or an upgraded unit. And Jerry, that's an excellent point. I know lots of people that just plug in the cable modem or DSL modem that their service provider has and don't think anything else about it. But I also know a lot of people that find that the Wi-Fi reliability they get from those products is lower than what they want. And in many cases, they want to have more control over what happens on their local network than those devices will provide. So,
yeah, for example, if you have a separate Wi-Fi base station and you have a switch and some devices are connected to the switch and the Wi-Fi happens to fail, you've still got ports on your switch where you can hard connect a device and be up and running. and get on the internet and request support or continue operations until you can replace just the Wi-Fi component. So there's that's a good approach I found in the past. That's why I never bought a time capsule, because if the time capsule failed, my airport went off the air.
Yeah.
And So I like that kind of individual component reliability.
Well, we are running out of time, so I'm going to do a totally spontaneous poll, and I'll start with me since I didn't warn you guys about this. And the question is, what are you using as the access point for your Wi-Fi network? And I replaced my Airport Extreme base station, which was reliable and rock solid, with an Era Wi-Fi mesh system. And the reason I switched to that was because I needed a mesh system in my place. And Apple doesn't offer that. And stringing together multiple base stations as because you can daisy chain them through your network, that just wasn't giving me what I needed. I needed the network management that came along with my Wi-Fi mesh system. So I switched to Eero. Andrew, how about you?
Actually, my apartment building gives free Wi-Fi to everyone, so I'm not sure what kind of routers they use.
Okay, but still, the big thing there is you're using something, but you can guarantee it's not an Apple product for your Wi-Fi.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and John, how about you?
Like I said, I have that Motorola cable modem connected to a quality business class router, and then plugged into the router. I still have an Apple Airport Extreme White Tower. The reason is because when you guys were on the Aero bandwagon, it didn't support IPv6. I still don't think it does.
No, it does.
And nowadays it does. So yeah. my single White Tower Airport Extreme is working well. It does everything it needs to do. I get good coverage in my house. When it breaks, I'll probably buy a new Aero with IPv6 support.
Yeah. Well, okay. So with our very limited survey pool, we came up with no airport base stations, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mine.
Well, yeah. So you have the one.
Yeah. I get good coverage in the house. I haven't had to use a mesh system in the house.
Yeah, and when my parents needed a Wi-Fi network that actually worked, as opposed to the modem Wi-Fi router combo that their service provider gave them, I went out and got them an Airport Extreme base station, and so they've been using that for years now, several years, and my dad was initially resistant. He's like, well, we've got this thing. It already works. At the same time, he's complaining, this thing never works. So I just went in. I set the thing up. I got all their devices switched over to the base station. And I haven't heard a word about it ever since, because it works so perfectly. They don't even think about it.
I mean, it's a pretty high quality, reliable device. I forget when I got mine, maybe what, 2012, 13?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just sits there and just operates. And when it stops operating, I'll definitely replace it. But right now it's doing the job I need.
Well, mine ended up at a friend's house because they had a time capsule that died and they needed a new base station. I'm like, hold on, I'll bring it over. Still has the original box.
One thing I like about it is I can operate it in bridge mode.
Yeah.
Are you doing that too?
I did use it in bridge mode. Okay. But now that it's gone, I just let the Eero do its own thing. And actually, no, at the end, I couldn't use it in bridge mode because I bought my own Cisco cable modem. And all it does is pass through a single IP. And so I needed to have my base station assigning all the IP addresses in the network. So no more bridging.
Oh, okay. Well, my router uses DHCP, and the reason I got it as a business class is because it can assign up to 100 or two, maybe 200 different DHCP addresses. I was running out of addresses with my old router, and friends would come and visit at Christmas time, and they'd want to attach their phones and their iPads to my network, and I ran out of addresses.
Yeah, that's
so. I just let it do DHCP, and then the airport base station in bridge mode passes them on.
Nice. So, all right. Well, we ran over, but I was really enjoying talking with both of you. So I kind of let us go over today. Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you on the show. And John, thank you for being here too.
Yeah, my pleasure. Nice to be here.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. And thank you for the feedback for the show and also to John's article about Wi-Fi. Totally appreciate it. You guys always rock, and I love reading your comments and getting your questions. So keep those coming in. And thanks for listening. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.